Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am ATCGS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for 43-odd years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we gather together in front of our radios to hopefully inform each other, teach each other, learn from each other, and amuse each other. So if you're not having fun, you're doing it all wrong. So with that in mind, thanks for returning again tonight for another episode where we try and do this all over again. I'll drop for a second and I'll give you the usual link. Okay. If you want to reach me, and you can't do it via the radio, then email is as good as any. That would be either for mailbag questions. Those are questions that you would normally ask on the technical net, but if you don't have access to the repeater, you can email them to me, and if it looks like a good question, I'll address it. You could either listen to an audio stream that we provide on the internet or a archived audio file of the technical net a few days later is available on a website, which we'll get to in a second. Or if you have a topic for discussion, occasionally technical topics are part of the regular news, and some of our participants are very knowledgeable about it. And I get an email, and they say, look, I know all about this subject. Is it okay for me to come on and discuss it for a little while? We do that. Sometimes people want to be part of a discussion of something technical. Other times people don't know that much about it, but they're interested, and they ask, could a bunch of people discuss this topic? So topics for discussion is another reason to email me. Also, if you have a technical puzzle, we're always looking for technical puzzles. They're very difficult to find, especially those that allow us to think about things and discuss other things. And certainly, I'm not looking for puzzles that you can Google and find the answer for in 10 seconds. So if you have a puzzle like that, please send it to me. Or if you'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at his face and ask a related story, you could email him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But for all else, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a second, and I will continue. Okay. Every week, I cut and paste a bunch of interesting YouTube videos, articles, all kinds of things. And I put it on a link page, and that link page is available 24/7 for the foreseeable future. You get there by typing into your browser, roy.at. To the link. You know, you can read them and see if anything interests you. They're available, as I said, 24/7. We also have a chat room. Sometimes it's very active. Lately, it's been kind of quiet, but, you know, these things have been slow. You can get to the chat room by typing in chat.ac2gs.com into your browser. As I mentioned earlier, we do stream this on the internet. If someone you know doesn't have access to the repeater and would like to listen to it live, or Glen Oaks in general, the Glen Oaks repeater live, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you a live audio stream. I used to only use it for the technical net, but some people asked if I could keep it going for the rest of the week, and so I try as best I can when Con Edison doesn't screw around with my electricity. And always I like to remind people, my KC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. And he has archives of our technical net going as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've either moved away from the area or become silent thieves. There's a lot of wisdom in there. So that's the link. I'll be right back to tell you what we got planned for today. Okay, we're going to ask, as per usual, for questions of a technical nature. I would prefer if the first few questions be amateur radio related, because this is an amateur radio repeater, and it is a technical net primarily for amateur radio purposes, but As anyone who has listened before, I am perfectly willing to discuss any science and or technology, and if I don't have anything to add, I can at least probably provide some form of resources to look into the subject. So if anyone has any scientific questions or technical questions, you're free to ask them here. I would prefer if the first two questions be amateur radio related, just because of the nature of the repeater we're operating on. 10:15, Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report. Then I will return at about 11 o'clock to put a bow on it and wish you all well. That's the plans if the laws of physics maintain themselves, and the repeater does, and my radio does, and Con Edison does. Anyway, if anyone has any questions or topics tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
TUD2OGB, currently standing by. Nothing to ask right now.
November Zulu Echo Alpha, my name is Glenn. I have a question or topic.
Yeah, sure, Glenn. Could you give me your call sign again? Part of it got broken up.
November 2, Zebra Eating Apples, ZEA.
Okay, very good, Glenn. I have you down. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
OGB, currently standing by. No questions right now.
Jim, KD2VHD.
Brian, K0BB.
Okay, Craig, Glenn, Jim, and Ryan all recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list before we begin? Okay, very good. Well, Craig doesn't have any questions. Just wanted to check in. So good for you, Craig. Welcome to the net. Glenn, and to ZEA, what's your question or comment for tonight?
Okay, I'm looking to inspire the rig in my car. And everything I see on YouTube says you're requiring bonding from panel to panel with a 1-inch copper braid. Maybe we could talk about a little bit how it's done exactly. Would I bring it to a body shop to do that? I'm not real great with cars, so I need a little assistance.
Okay, very good, Glenn. I don't have that much personal expertise in this particular subject. I understand that there are places that can provide the service. Usually they're the same people that used to put in auxiliary sound, radios and amplifiers for cars. But, I guess it's a station-by-station type of a situation that you might be best to, get the modern-day Google version of the Yellow Pages and call around local shops and see if there's anyone who has particular expertise. But I'm sure there are other people out there who have had this experience before, and if you'd like to chime in, please feel free.
Can you repeat the question? It was not well heard.
I'm looking at the phone, H-Bring in my car. And everything I've seen on YouTube says that you have to put all the metallic surfaces under the car together, the muffler and all the panels on the door and the hood. They said these are 1-inch copper brick. It looks like a huge, I don't think I could do it myself. I was wondering if there's anybody who does that or if I should go to a body shop for that. I did go to one audio instructor and he really wanted nothing to do with it.
Were you able to understand him, John?
I'm getting some break up here. I'm not sure if the repeater where the node is located is getting some interference or whatever. But yeah, I think I understood the question now. He wants to bond metal parts together with braided wire to, I guess he's trying to do some noise mitigation. Is that correct, KC2 and CHM?
I'm going to put... we've got a screwdriver and antenna, and the factory says you got to bond all the metal surface together, although it's not going to work very well.
Yeah, That's interesting. I would think they'd be responding pretty well already. Extra sounding strap on their pieces probably would hurt, or maybe you get some noise, or maybe they've just had people who have had problems, and now they just say, you know, please do this to avoid an issue. I would try installing it first and see if you have any problems. If you don't have any problem, why just do the trouble? All those parts should be pretty well bolted together and bonded well enough, I would think, but, you know, I'm not an expert or experience running screwdriver antennas in the car. I remember when I worked with Clint WC3HB, he had one on his car. I don't think he went through any extra steps other than just making sure the antenna was well mounted and bonded at the mounting point. But me personally, I've done a lot of work on cars and worked in stereo shops. I would probably just try it and see if everything's good. If everything's good, don't worry about it.
Was that one of the cars aren't welded together anymore? A lot of parts are glued together, and it doesn't have a very good RF. That's what I want you to buy. I don't know if it's true or not. I haven't heard it yet. Just wondering if anybody had any experience.
Okay, let me see if I have the repeater. Okay. Yeah, I was going to kind of make that point, John. You know, today's cars aren't quite the same as they were 10, 20, certainly 30 years ago, where they were just one big welded together chassis. Now there's all these electronic devices that are isolated, shielded from each other, and there's all kinds of additional nonsense. So it might not be the case of modern cars being the way the cars that you worked on. There's always that possibility that you could test it and see if it works and see if it's tolerable. Again, my gut feeling would be, you know, if you fail with one place that puts in car radios or something equivalent, I would just go through the book and contact them all. You might find someone who's a little bit more aggressive and looking to do something a little challenging than, you know, the average guy who just sort of knows how to do one thing and only wants to do that one thing. But once again, if anyone out there has had any similar experiences with modern-day cars that are kind of built like computers almost, and has any good suggestions for Glenn, please feel free to hit that push-to-talk.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
It sounds like you bought the antenna recently. Does the copper braided cable come with that when you buy it, or are they telling him to go up and do this all on his own?
No, it's a scorpion antenna, and the factory says you got a braider that you can stick it to work, and the ESW right now is pretty reasonable.
Having a tough copy with him, like John. Roy, you got it?
Yeah, he said that the manufacturers recommend that he bond the separate portions of the car. I don't think it's part of the installation equipment. It's just a recommendation on the instructions.
Right, so they said the wire won't go down to where it's supposed to be unless this procedure is done.
Yeah, my guess is there's not enough solid, continuous conductors. So by bonding the different portions of the car, you get a better chance of it acting as a proper counterpoint. Also, Glenn, as you might have noticed from other people responding, there's a lot of noise and break off on your signal. So I'm not quite sure if it's something on the radio or, you know, the propagation conditions aren't that great, but you might want to kind of over-enunciate and repeat the important things so that people can get it the second time, if not the first.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. I'm just listening for a response. And Tuesday, Alpha.
Comment, Mark, easy to
yes. Yes, please comment.
It kind of sounds like maybe he's over deviating. It's only on the high point that he's breaking up, so maybe he's having a little trouble with over deviation. I don't know. Just a guess. But, yeah, you know, that's a good point. I did actually work with a product called Panel Bond, and apparently this is the new way of putting panels together. It's really just a glue, and they squeeze it out of a gun and squish the panels together. I don't know if there's any conductive properties to that material. That'd be something to check out and see. You would think the manufacturers would be concerned about continuity between the car. I mean, are they running a new separate ground wire to every light and piece of equipment that gets power? Because even in the modern cars I've touched a little bit of, they're still just screw to the body panel when you take, for example, the light out of the socket, you know. If it was true, then, you know, your lights wouldn't work and things like that. So I'm kind of curious if they're now running ground wires to every light and accessory. IEC2, GS, IEC2M.
Well, according to the Scorpion, they say there's a difference between an RF ground and a DC ground. And that'll do it.
Well, you know, I understand the concept of there's all kinds of different ground. Unfortunately, our nomenclature and use of ground is very fuzzy, but usually if there's a constant DC ground, there's nothing really limiting it being used as an RF ground. But I don't think modern manufacturers are concerned about that. If anything, if they had their way, they would probably take every radio transmitter out of the system just because it probably is a headache to deal with the control boxes. You know, cars these days are more computers than they are motor vehicles almost. So I could sort of understand that they might not be well designed anymore for having counterpoises.
Is he saying the automotive manufacturer is recommending this, or the antenna manufacturer?
No, the manufacturer.
Again, Glenn, unfortunately you're breaking up. My sense was that the Scorpion, the manufacturer, is issuing those warnings. They must have gotten repeatedly burned in the past, and so they actually took the trouble of updating their installation guides. We talked a couple of months ago about tightened gaps that required you to use their coax and not replace them, and not to use double shielded coax, but they never bothered to put it in any of their instructions. You have to call them up and ask them why your antenna isn't working, and then they tell you the magic secret. So at least Scorpion writes it down, I guess, on the instruction manual. Yes, please, comment.
Okay, quick. The station that has the question in the first place seems to be somewhat off frequency. That's why the sound is breaking up. So if you get a good digital counter that's known to be accurate, put it on your radio and see if you can tweak the frequency so that it's more dead on the channel. Because it sounds like you're more 3 or 4 kilohertz, which will cause your signal to drop out every time you hit a modulation. Okay, that and bonding the panels together on your car. That may make a difference on the low frequency end. If you want to make your antenna work at 80 meters or at 40 meters, or I'll put it this way, below, you know, the wavelength below 40, you know, 80, 160, down in that area, bonding the car together will give you a better ground. But if you want to run your antenna at a higher frequency, the roof panel is probably big enough. It doesn't need to be grounded and bonded the way that they're suggesting. Only for the lower frequencies where the grounds may not be so good. Now, back to that.
Okay, that makes sense, certainly. You need a larger counterpoise, a greater dimension to work as a decent counterpoise for lower and lower frequencies. So, I mean, part of it, I guess, is what part of the ham band Are you interested in Glenn? Are you planning to go on the lower frequencies, or are you going to be sticking around from 20 to 10?
I was hoping to do 20 and 40.
Okay. I'm not quite sure if you'd get to 40. It really depends on how segmented. John earlier mentioned, and I vaguely remember reading about a bonding mat, he mentioned mats, bonding mats that are made of some conductive material that are designed to kind of bond different portions of the car. It had to be at least 6-7 years ago, and I haven't seen anything since. But you might want to try Googling the subject and see, certainly Google YouTube, because if it's out there, there's some guy who videotapes himself doing it, and you can kind of assess whether you think you're up for it or not. And again, I would just kind of call all the local body shops and radio installation shops and see if you get lucky. If anyone else has any ideas, please feel free.
Let's see if I have it. One second. I'm just reminded of, you know, the two scenarios where a ground plane is generally desirable. And correct me if I'm wrong, you either want a quarter wave ground plane or near infinite, close of course. These are KTORIW's words, that near infinite would mean that it's much, much longer than the wavelength. On a car with HF operation, this must be really difficult to achieve either one of those scenarios adequately.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, let me see if I have the repeater for a sec. Okay. I mean, ultimately, it's going to be another compromise. It's not going to be as efficient as a legitimate, say, approximately quarter wave. Because Glenn is talking about a screwdriver, which is basically a shortened quarter wave with a variable loading coil that changes via a screwdriver motor type of mechanism. So it operates as any shortened loaded vertical quarter wave. It needs some form of radial or counterpoise in order to balance the one element that antenna is. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, the best answer is to kind of run some piece of wire that's one quarter wavelength and have it trail you in the car, but dangerous and not going to last very long. So you have to deal with what you got, and the only thing you have is the chassis of your car, so you make best do. In Glenn's case, apparently the manufacturer Scorpion has seen a lot of unhappy customers because of the segmented grounding that appears to be the case in a lot of modern cars, and their best solution is to somehow bond all those segments in the car together the way they originally were done. You know, in the old days, it was just this massive iron chassis that kind of secured itself from one end of the car to the other, but that's apparently not the case anymore. But again, I'm not quite sure, but I was trying to do a little Googling. It's kind of difficult to Google and run a net simultaneously. I haven't quite found it, but I distinctly recall that there were products that were designed to bond separate ground structures in automobiles. I just don't remember any of the details.
There's a guy on YouTube who talks about this specifically. The Google bonding and HF radio installation. So come on, he went through a whole explanation why he did it, and it just looks like a very involved process, so it was very difficult.
Real good. Thank you, Lloyd.
Yeah, getting back to you, Glenn, I understand. I appreciate it. And probably to do a legitimate great job, it requires a significant amount of disassembling cars, which is not an easy thing to do, and to understand where the portions are isolated to somehow strap the separate grounds into one solid structure. So, yeah, unless you dedicate yourself to it and or have a lot of experience in working with cars and knowing how to take them apart and then, more important, put them back together, it's probably a much more rigorous thing. Again, I wish I offhand knew the remembered the details of that bonding. It's in the back of my head, it seems to be a relatively easier thing than what you're talking about, which is probably the best method, but the most labor-intensive method. So once again, if anyone else has any insight into this, please help out Glenn.
KD2BHD.
Yes, Jim.
I don't have an answer, but perhaps the story that the car manufacturers seem to be moving towards eliminating AM radios in the cars ties in with this somehow. Perhaps they're having difficulty making the AM radio work quietly enough with the isolated panels and a non-continuous ground. Might have something to do with the situation. Unknown, just a suggestion.
My assumption is that automobile companies would prefer not to deal with anything that works on amplitude modulation and would prefer people to keep radio transmitters out of their cars, because as time has gone on, they've had to incorporate more and more and more and more and more sophisticated electronics that generates a lot of RFI and interacts with RF signals. And, you know, I'm sure they apply best practices to grounds and shields, but the less that they have to deal with, the happier they would be. So I think your last, you know, the last thing I would do is call up the manufacturers and ask for advice, because my guess would be they tell you not to put a radio in their cars. You know, that's just the way I suss up what's going on with these companies. They're not really radio friendly. It's kind of like cars today are completely different things than they used to be. They're glorified computers. So I think they're erring on the side of, please don't screw with our electronics.
WB2IKC is a special comment here.
Yes, IKK.
Okay, thanks, Lord. I was able to get to the Scorpion antenna's installation instructions. And what they say is, and I'm going to quote from them directly, is, quote, it's very wise to bond all body parts, doors, hood, and trunk to the main body. Increase the size of the bonding strap from the engine to the frame or body. Bond the muffler system in three places by using muffler clamps and bonding straps to the frame. Bond at the exhaust pipe next to engine, next to the muffler, and the tailpipe. The exhaust system is insulated from the frame because it hangs on rubber grommets. The engine and transmission are insulated by the frame from the frame by rubber mounts. Bonding of the vehicle parts and muffler systems will help get rid of engine noise and other interference. And here's a hint. The next sentence says, DX Engineering, a well-known vendor, carries bonding straps and muffler clamps. If you still have bad radio interference from your vehicle, check with the dealer and use the information they have for communication radio install. It goes on to say it's required to sand, paint, and primer when installing the bonding straps. Use stainless fender washers, one on each side of the braid, blah, blah, blah. Then it goes to some self-tapping screws and some instructions on how to work the screw and make sure that the lacquer is scraped away from underneath the screw so you can get a good inspection. Back to that. This is WB2IKC.
Yes, that's exactly the information I got. I just don't think I can do that.
For whatever reason, Glenn, your last signal was wonderful. So whatever you did, keep on doing it. What are the other things out there, if anyone knows? Do you know of any body shop or radio installation company that has the mojo to take on something like this? Or you know, I guess most of these other companies are just looking for a simple job that they do day in and day out. But if anyone has the name of any shop, that would be useful for this gentleman.
Try Best Buy. They install auto stereos and CDs, and they might get lucky and find somebody that knows what they're really talking about.
Okay, good place to start.
Okay, thanks for that suggestion. I would imagine Best Buy kind of contracts out people, but I could be wrong. There's a bunch of other options. Theoretically, there are websites that have people that have specialties. You could Google it and see if anyone in the area is advertising their talents for doing something along these lines. It's a little on the esoteric side, but you never know what you might find. As I always say, Google is your friend.
That's true. It's kind of like fishing. You never know what you're going to find.
Yes, exactly. So, proper bait and all. I wish you good luck, Len. If you do succeed, please come back and tell us how it went.
Okay, I will do that, I promise. And maybe see some of you guys this weekend at the Hancock.
K2GJE?
Yes, Ed.
There are still people out there with radio in their trucks, like fire departments, police departments, service companies like oil burners, a company. I know the biggest one, of course, is Motorola, but maybe a Motorola dealer can steer him to someone that does their mechanical work over.
Okay, that's a good idea, Glenn. You could try that. Again, you could do searches on the internet for those types of local retailers.
Excellent idea. I didn't even think of that. It's great.
Okay, very good. Again, I wish you luck, Glenn, and please come back and tell us how it went. And I hope you have success, and I hope you enjoy your screwdriver and have a lot of contact. By the way, is there anything you particularly did a few minutes ago that changed your signal to a much better one?
Yeah, just the transmit frequency. I was off by a little bit.
Okay, very good. So I think Jay was correct. Okay, very good, Glenn. Good luck.
Okay, 73, thank you very much. N2Z Echo Alpha.
Okay, next on our list is Jim, KD2VHC.
Thank you. My topic / question is likely too fresh on the interweb, intertubes, intermingling of signal and noise to pick apart, but I'm curious if anybody has a handle on this yet. Seems to be a story going around about a military drone controlled by AI and a mishap. Any feedback on that, if that's just signal or noise or any relevant?
To prove it false, that was a story where, quote, somebody misspoke, unquote, and a lot of people feel it was an attempt to just stir up some discussion because nobody could seriously believe it.
Yeah, that was presented.
Thank you for feedback. I appreciate it.
Peter.
I'll leave it at that. Thanks, Roy.
Okay, very good, Jim. I think that was the report that started with killer AI, takes over a drone and starts to attack people. Was that the one?
The way that it was presented, they seemed to be saying that the when the operator was canceling the mission, the AI of the drone caught on that was not allowing it to accomplish its mission, so we've eliminated the problem. So if it's BS and then noise and not signal, well, then we'll leave it at that. I won't go on about it.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it reeks a little bit of Terminator. So, you know, some stories just don't sound quite right from the get-go.
It definitely had that ring to it, but it's such a new territory that the antennas are up for things like that. But we know what happened. All right, again, I think we'll let that story drop because let's not beat it up too much.
Okay, someone wanted to make a comment, but it was about 99.9% noise. So either pick up the gain or change the position of your antenna if it's on a handy talkie and give it another try.
WBGCQT?
Yes, BBG.
Yes, it's Canada, Quebec, Tango. I believe that story started with the word simulation. I think it was a military simulation where the thing didn't do what they programmed it to do. It apparently decided to do something else. I think that's the whole story.
Okay, I can believe it better as a simulation. Artificial intelligence is an overused buzzword these few months. It still requires a sizable amount of CPU prowess to get the job done. So that's why you can't really run an artificial intelligence on your laptop. You have to log into a server rack. It sounded a little weird when it comes to a drone, but if it's a simulation on a bunch of server racks and such, you know, a simulated problem can, I guess, occur. But, we don't have to worry too much about drones becoming self-aware anytime too soon, as far as I'm aware of the technology.
Well, let's hope so.
And also, we're going to need you.
Most cars today don't have a frame. They're unibody. They have stuff in the front, the engine and the drive, and they're just trailing wheels or something. My friend that lives in Missouri has a 2021 Camaro. He put a hitch on the back where he mounts a screwdriver, and he talks all over the world, and he never did anything else to the car.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. So I'm sure Glenn is still listening. One of the possibilities to consider is, especially if you already have the screwdriver, install it as per instructions without the multiple bonding. See if you get the amount of contact that you expected. If not, you know, then go to Plan B, where you go looking for someone to bond them. I assume you probably already own the Scorpion anyway, so it's not that you're going to lose any money. So, again, that kind of goes back to how we began this conversation. You might want to just try it out before excessive bonding and see if the fans that you're interested in let you get away with it.
It's coming in the mail in a couple of days. I've been waiting 6 weeks for this thing. I'm excited.
Oh, okay, very good. So, you know, I don't know what model you have. I don't know which models are unibonded and others that are isolated into little areas, but it seems like not a big problem to just try it out and see how it runs. Okay, once again, good luck to you, Glenn, and thank you, Jim, for the question, and that takes us to Ryan, K0BB.
Yeah, thanks. This is Ryan, K0BB. My question is actually for my stepfather. He's a ham and an volunteer firefighter in Arkansas, and he wants to set up a station at his house that does 2 meters as well as does the VHF public service band for his area, which I think is like 150 megahertz, 154, maybe 157 megahertz. And so my question was, how could he set up his station such that the two don't couple or interfere. I think my idea was, because he's talking through one repeater for his fire usage, was to aim a Yagi at that repeater and then put the monopole, you know, a vertical antenna behind for the 2 meters, so that way the front-to-back ratio would shield the public service radio. I just wonder if anybody had any thoughts about how to set that up when they have to be close together, both in band and in physical location.
Okay, I'll open it to discussion. Yeah, I mean, separate them physically as far apart as he's able to, and more directional antenna is the best. If his VHF contacts are through repeaters and he can kind of line them up, you probably have a better degree of isolation if you had 2 Yagis instead of 1. But if his VHF ham is kind of, he wants it non-directional, which is understandable, then yeah, the service one at 154 or so could be a very directional, and the other a more omnidirectional. Anyone else with any options? I mean, you know, theoretically, if money was no object, you could go into very weird places and talk about duplexers, but they get really expensive. The diplexer such would not have the selectivity and isolation. You would need something much more technologically advanced, like a duplexer, and those can go for thousands of dollars. So I don't think that's readily a reasonable solution. Anyone else with any ideas, please feel free.
Kilo Delta 2, Mike India.
Yes, Mike India.
Good evening. Name is John. The station who's interested in work at 2 different bands may want to try separating the antennas vertically. In other words, you can put it up on a mast on the roof and separate the commercial band from your amateur band. They'll get a lot more isolation between the antennas that way.
So you're suggesting stacking them?
Not phasing them together. They would need to be on separate coax. But, separating them vertically instead of separating them horizontally from each other. You'll get a lot more isolation if, let's say, one's 10 feet up in the air and the other one's 20 feet.
Well, would it give you any more separation if you separated them horizontally by the same distance?
I believe if we're talking a vertical antenna, you'll get a lot more isolation, particularly if it's a high gain antenna, which, you know, if we're talking VHF, is fairly easy to do if you separate them vertically.
Okay, but probably you would even compound it by moving them. One is on one side of the roof, assuming it has to be on a roof. The other is on the other side of the roof, and their elevations are different as well. So you kind of compound the benefit of separating them.
Yes, K0BP, that's a good idea about separating them vertically. I hadn't thought about that. Cool. Well, that answers my question. I think that, I was wondering about a diplexer or a duplexer, but I was thinking that would be prohibitively expensive for the narrow bandwidth we're talking about.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if money was no object, that would probably be a reasonable thing, but most people, you know, spending thousands of dollars for something like that is excessive. It's a shame that his 154 repeater isn't oriented horizontally instead of vertically, because that would introduce a degree of isolation as well, to have them polarized at 90 degrees from each other. But I doubt that they're doing that.
Yes, mainly for, like I said, fire response. So I believe they're mostly vehicle antennas, which are probably monopoles, vertically polarized. Okay, well, thank you all for the input. I actually have another question if there's no other ones in the queue. It's a quick one related to antennas and cars.
Sure, Ryan. We have a free night here.
I was thinking about, I have like a crossover SUV, and I was wondering about putting some antennas on the roof, but I was thinking about using one of those motorized luggage rack mounts that can tilt the antenna up and down. And I was wondering, do you have to ground, again, it's kind of a ground question, but this is for VHF, UHF antennas. Do you have to do anything to ground them, especially if they're up above the roof like that?
Yeah, if they're, most mobile antennas are designed for the chassis to be the ground, to be the ground plane. If they have built-in radial, then you don't have to worry about that, but almost every car antenna I've ever seen doesn't have radials. So if they have radials, it's good. If they don't have radials, you have to bind it in some way to the chassis to work properly.
All right, quick question, quick answer. All right, well, thanks. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I'm kind of thinking about tricking out my my mobile system. So, all right, thank you very much. K0BB, back to net.
You're welcome, Ryan. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limelon Technical Net. And if you're out there and you got a question or a topic you'd like to discuss, please feel free. Hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
K2GJE.
Yes, Ed.
I have to renew next year, but the FCC wants money from now on. Has anyone renewed recently, and what is the procedure over?
Okay. Well, I was lucky enough to renew right before the payment program was instated. And when the FCC tried to do it in the computer, I think their system was down for a better part of a month. But I got a very strange email. I'm a member of another club, the Kings County Radio Club, and some nice lady in California misunderstood and thought that the Kings County Radio Club was within her range. And so she contacted me, because my name's on the website, and asked me a similar question. The FCC has a page that comes up for billing purposes, and they take credit cards. So what you would do is log into the FCC ULS and go to your particular page, and there should be links to process renewal, and then it'll take you to the billing page. In the good old days, before there was billing, you could, if you were a member of the ARRL, one of the features was that they took care of it for you. But when they instated the billing process, I think I'm not quite sure they either will renew it and then leave it to you to pay for it, or not even touch it anymore. I've lost track with what the ARRL does, but it's put a crimp in the whole system. It shouldn't be that difficult. There are pages. If you want me to send you a copy of the link that I found for the lady in California, I would be more than happy to.
US2N?
Yes, Paul.
Put it on the chat room, the website for renewal.
Well, probably I'll put it on the link page. You have to understand. Well, either that, or I'll do it during your SpaceNet report, because it's kind of difficult to search through my mail and do a technical net simultaneously.
Okay, very good. I guess there's no way to send a check in anymore. Those days are over, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, those days are over. Although there are still guys out there, the headset that I'm using today is imported from Japan from this guy in upstate New York who doesn't take credit cards, and he requires checks, And he won't just send you the product if you send him a check. If you send him a check, he cashes it. He waits to see if it's good, and then he sends you the headset. So there's still people out there deeply invested in checks. But getting back to Ed for a second, our good friend who we talked to on the TechNet last Sunday night, John KD2BD, has listed the address for renewal. So, Ed, all you got to do is type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com and just look at it, and you can click the link. It's available in the chat room as we speak.
Very good. I'm writing that down. Chat AC2GS. I used to have ARRL do it for me, but I haven't seen anything in QSC. Okay, I'll look in the chat room. Okay, very good. Bye.
Okay, very good, Ed. I'm sure this will solve your problem. I mean, it took a while for the FCC to figure this one out. Like I said, the entire renewal system was awful for about a month. But if you give them enough time, even federal employees can get the job done. So it shouldn't be too painful. It's probably just a credit card number away. Oh, by the way, John KD2BD also mentioned that site suggests that they do accept checks or money orders by clicking in the appropriate box and such. But, you know, anyone out there who has a credit card, unless you're terribly paranoid, I would go the quickest, easiest way. Mail occasionally gets lost, so keep that in mind. So.
Okay.
Once again, I remain AC2GS, I remain Roy, and this remains the Weimar Technical Mess. So if there's anyone out there with any other questions or topics for discussion tonight, please feel free to hit that push talk button.
W2BZ?
Yes, Rich.
When it comes to antennas, what's the definition of resonance?
Resonance is when your antenna demonstrates no reactance, neither capacitive reactance or inductive reactance, and the entirety is real radiation resistance, or, you know, ohmic resistance. But if it's capacitively reactive or inductively reactive, by definition, it's no longer resonant.
And how does that happen? What are the variables that you can adjust?
Well, I think we stepped on John, Stacy2SHO. If he had something he wanted to say, what do you want to say, Joe? John?
Well, sounded like he was expanding his question. Maybe go with that for now. But, you know, if you want a more layman's term explanation of resonance, I might be able to do that.
Okay, John, you know, stay tuned. I'm sure there'll be more than a few opportunities. Just to kind of go a little bit further with Rich's comment, there's a lot of different ways that you change the frequency resonance of antennas. If you change their dimensions, if you change any additional loading coils or capacitors that are incorporated in the design, unfortunately, to a degree, if you introduce things into the near field that couple with it, all those can have an effect to change the impedance of the radiating element into something that is more reactive and therefore off-resonance. And there's ultimately a newer frequency where the inductive and capacitance reactants cancel each other out, and that's the new resonant point for that antenna.
So I'm just trying to understand this. If you have an antenna that's or a feed line that's 50 ohms, and you get rid of the capacitive? Well, let me ask a different question, and maybe it'll make it clearer. I was talking to somebody about my mag loop, and they said what a mag loop is one big capacitor. Do you agree with that, Roy?
Not really. I think that's a simplification of because then the length of the loop is not necessarily meaningful. If it's just a giant capacitor, you should be able to have a real short length of wire connecting the two parts and settle with that. But that wouldn't work. So it to me it's a shortened dipole. Instead of, if you think of a shortened dipole and then correct it with capacitive hats on either side and then twist the two capacitive hats into each other, to me that's what a magnetic loop is. I think it's an oversimplification to say that it's just a glorified big capacitor.
HD comment.
Yes, Jeff.
That might have been me that referred to that mag loop as a big capacitor, but I did not mean it from the standpoint of a mag loop as a capacitor, but his mag loop with the wrapped foil as its conductive element. I was thinking that the dielectric effect of the adhesive on the copper foil wrapped around the thing would do things that were unpredictable. That's what I was talking about, if that's what he's referring to.
Okay, that's a very special case. Most people don't have bilayer conductors. Depending upon how it's the insulator, the adhesive insulator works, it's probably not the greatest insulator. So, and both the copper and the aluminum are probably wired in together to the capacitors, so the effect of capacitance of the bilayer probably doesn't factor in a great deal.
Jim, yes, I was referring to your comments. Thank you. Now, the variable capacitor acts on the loop by, of course, changing the capacitance of the loop. Is that correct?
Yes, it changes the impedance of the loop from something with excessive inductance to something to no inductance and no net capacitive reactance. It nulls it out and leaves you with a radiation resistance of something like a tenth or a hundredth of an ohm.
The radiation resistance is, you want that as low as possible so it doesn't eat up power, correct?
No, it's the exact opposite. You want a high radiation resistance, you want a relatively low ohmic waste heat resistance because you want it to act as a radiation resistance is not really a resistor in everyone's mind. It has the same function. It dissipates power, but radiation resistance doesn't dissipate it like a resistor does into just waste heat. It removes it by having it radiate RF into the air, which is the whole point of the exercise.
So in this case, see, I did have that backwards. In this case, the more radiation resistance, the better.
Yes, as your radiation resistance decreases, the effect of insertion losses become more and more and more important. So let's go back to the very beginning of a center-fed half-wave dipole in free space has a radiation resistance of 73 ohms. So if you introduce something like 5 ohms or 10 ohms, ridiculously, as insertion loss, that's a pittance. That's a small fraction of the power that's being radiated as opposed to turned into heat. Now flip it on its side and make it a mag loop that has 0.01 ohms radiation resistance.
add just 2 or 3 ohms of insertion loss, and, you know, 95% of your energy is being taken up as heat because it has a higher resistance than your radiator.
So why can't you take two pieces of wire, 4 feet long, connect them in the middle, and then connect a variable capacitor to it, you know, like a regular dipole, then connect a variable capacitor to it and achieve what you